like, I do realize there were so many red flags, and part of me, you know, always wished that someone would kind of question me more. And, you know, especially, you know, when I wouldn't eat dinner and, you know, my parents would ask why, and I would say, you know, I was already full or something, you know, I wish that they had really, you know, pushed me and questioned me. Yeah, it was just, I was crying out for help, you know, silently, and just wishing more than anything that someone would notice that I wasn't okay.
Welcome to Weighing In on Happy, the only podcast that dives deep into discussions around weight, eating disorders, mental health, body image, intuitive eating, wellness, confidence, and so much more. Each week, you'll be coached through different stories and strategies on how to start living your best life today. So, if you're ready, here's your host, Victoria Evans.
This episode of Weighing In on Happy has been brought to you by my Craving Food Freedom membership program. If you are looking to join an international community of women collectively healing their relationship with food and their body, then this is the place for you. If you're currently feeling out of control and afraid around some foods, thinking obsessively about food and your body all day long, you're tired of saying that tomorrow is a new day and you'll start over, that some foods are good and bad, and just feeling alone on this journey and wanting some accountability, community, and support so you can break free and live a life of food freedom, then be sure to check out my website, www.victoriaevansofficial.com, and check out the members tab. You can find out everything you need to know there and sign up immediately and get full access to this program. Now, before we dive into this episode, I wanted to say that this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only, and sometimes entertainment. So do not take what is said in this podcast as medical advice. Please seek medical health professionals. Hey, you guys, welcome back to Weighing In on Happy. My name is Victoria Evans. I'm an intuitive eating coach, and I am super excited because I'm joined today by Emma Gerard. So Emma is a personal trainer, nutrition coach, and health strategist who supports women in building healthy and sustainable lifestyles from a holistic approach, focusing on intuitive eating and effective exercise. So she specializes actually in working with women who struggle with binge eating, dieting, and other forms of disordered eating. And she takes a really unique approach by combining her work with hundreds of patients in a clinical and community setting, the evidence-based practices in the field, and her own unique experience with binge eating disorder. So welcome, Emma.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited to have you because I am someone who struggled a lot with binge eating, and there's so much mystery and misunderstanding and shame and guilt surrounded by it. So I'm excited to have an open conversation and really dig into basically onto just everything around binge eating, you know, our stories, and make it something that we can talk about because that's really where the healing starts.
Absolutely. I totally agree. I think so many, you know, forms of disordered eating, whether it's binging or something else, you know, it really thrives in isolation. So once you're able to talk about it, it just becomes so much easier to deal with. And it is so much more common than any of us think. But actually a lot of us do struggle with these things. So I'm so glad that we're talking about it. And yeah.
Yeah. And so I know that you were actually in sports medicine, you know, we're doing kinesiology. How did that kind of relate to what you're doing now? You know, and how does that relate to your story as well as your struggles in eating disorder?
Yeah, so I did study kinesiology at UBC. So I did a 4-year bachelor degree. And when I graduated, I started working as a kinesiologist at a sports medicine center. And I really enjoyed my work. I loved working one-on-one with people and supporting them through exercise. But a lot of the patients that I was seeing, they were coming to me and kind of asking, you know, how could they be healthier or how could they lose weight? And I was realizing that exercise was just such a small part of that. You know, there was nutrition and there was mindset and there were so many other factors that I just wasn't able to tackle with them in the scope of being a kinesiologist. So I really wanted to take a more holistic approach. And that's kind of how I started my own online business, just so I could, you know, reach more people and, yeah, like I said, have a bit more of a holistic approach with them.
Yeah, I know for myself, I was doing, like on the side of one of my corporate job, I was doing personal training and I found like people were coming to me and it wasn't really the working out that they had the issue with. It was, yeah, like everything else beside that, like the eating, the mindset, why they actually wanted to change their body and lose weight. And it was really usually coming from a very kind of disordered, toxic place.
And so it was kind of bizarre only being able to kind of offer them the fitness side of things, knowing there were so many more things that were deeper that were actually going on. And then there was almost like a bit of a cry for help, but like something was going on in their life, they needed help, but they weren't really sure what it meant to get help or what it looks like. So it's really cool that you were able to notice that and then kind of realize and start to take more of a holistic approach with that.
Yeah, definitely.
And so you mentioned before that you'd struggled with an eating disorder. And so what did that look like for you?
Yeah, so I can remember as early as about grade 4. I remember one very specific moment when I asked my mom one day after school whether or not I was fat. And I just kind of had this question randomly and I asked her and, you know, she said, no, definitely you're not. Of course you're not. You know, that's such a crazy thing to say. Don't say that. And so, you know, I just kind of believed her, but in the back of my mind, you know, I couldn't shake this feeling that, you know, I was fat and something was like wrong with me. And I started to kind of compare myself a lot to my friends in my class and the other girls, and a lot of them were, you know, quite thin. And, you know, I was never objectively overweight as a child, but I, you know, was a bit of a larger child that kind of developed a little bit quicker than others. And so I just didn't really feel, you know, I just felt so different compared to my friends and also to the people that I was seeing in the media as well. And when I was in grade 5, I kind of struggled to make friends. And so often I would really dread like lunch hours and recesses because I would have nothing really to do. And so one day I discovered that across the street from my elementary school, there was a vending machine. And so I thought, oh, that's, you know, something to do. So I went over and I got a chocolate bar. And I really enjoyed eating the chocolate bar during my lunch hour, and it just brought me so much comfort and just made me feel really happy. And so I kind of started to do that every single day. And it turned from just being one chocolate bar to suddenly being 5 chocolate bars. And it became kind of a ritual for me. And then soon I kind of found that, you know, the chocolate at lunch wasn't really enough. And by the time I was let out of school around 3 p.m., I kind of needed another hit, so to speak. And so I would rush home before my mom got home or before my siblings got there, and I would just eat anything I could find in the kitchen. And we didn't have kind of typical unhealthy, you know, foods that you might think of typically, like chips and cookies and things. So I had to get really creative, and I ate some really bizarre like combinations of foods, and, you know, always really, really quickly. And then I would always hide everything, clean all the dishes, throw all the garbage away, so there was zero trace of what I had done. And I always felt really, really sick afterwards, and I had a headache and a stomach ache, and I felt really guilty. And I knew on some level that what I was doing wasn't normal, because, you know, I always did it in secrecy, and, you know, I never, ever would want anyone to kind of find out about it. And then as I got a bit older and kind of had a bit of my own money, I would start, you know, buying foods at grocery stores and things and binging on them. And, yeah, that kind of pattern continued all through elementary school and high school and into university. And, you know, at my kind of most serious point, I would say I was binging, you know, at least once, if not multiple times a day, and kind of just existing solely off the food that I was binging on. So not eating anything outside of that, trying to restrict everything else in an effort to still maintain a low enough weight. And so I was literally just existing off of like chocolate and cookies and things for years on end. And you know, anytime someone, you know, like my parents would offer me dinner or snacks or other food, you know, I always had kind of an excuse or like a reason why I couldn't eat. You know, I wasn't hungry, or I'd already eaten, or, you know, there was always some reason that I was coming up with. And I was very sneaky and kind of good at playing this game. And then in about third year of university, I think as a combination of maybe, you know, my slowing metabolism and my increased binging and sitting around studying a lot, so not being as active as I had been in high school, I started to gain weight. And I ended up gaining quite a bit of weight, about 80 pounds. And so suddenly a lot of people, you know, my family and some of my friends started asking like, oh, kind of what happened? Like, why did you gain all this weight? And I started to freak out because I kind of thought, okay, like my cover has been blown in a sense. Like everyone knows, you know, I can't hide in this kind of smaller body. Now I felt really like exposed and really uncomfortable, and my clothes didn't fit, and everything just happened so quickly. And that was actually when I decided that, you know, I should go and get some help. I still hadn't really admitted that I had an eating disorder per se. I just thought, okay, I need to go to my doctor and get help to lose the weight so that people will stop questioning me. And when I saw my doctor, I was then referred to a dietitian and referred to a psychologist. And, you know, through that process, slowly, I was able to come to terms with the fact that something much more serious was going on. And that's kind of when I started my road to recovery. Well, yeah, kind of my story in a nutshell.
So much to what, like everything you are saying, like from a young child, I remember coming home from school and I always, like you, you know, felt like I was in a bit of a larger body compared to most children. Like I'm 5'10" now and I've always had like broader shoulders and was the tallest, and just did not feel like I fit in, and food was like that comfort for me. And I remember coming home from school, like getting off the bus and like coming home and just eating these cookies in front of the TV and just being able to totally numb out and just avoid the day. And I even remember those Toll House cookie dough cookies, like you get the, it was like the dough and it was still in the tube. And I remember my mom getting so mad at me because I'd hidden the tube underneath the stairs and I would go down. It's so gross because it was like, you know, there's eggs in it and stuff too. And I would like hit it in the trunk underneath the stairs and go down, like takes like handfuls of it and eat the dough. And like, I was so sneaky about it. And that's the thing with binge eating. It's like, you become such a master liar. Like you're so good at lying and being sneaky and being clever, which really plays into, again, like the whole disorder because you don't want to talk about it. And as well for myself, like gaining weight in university, after a sexual assault, I put on quite a bit of weight. And then, yeah, I felt like I was like, okay, I can't really get away with this behavior before, especially like I was an athlete and I was able to kind of keep a lot of my weight at bay because I was training so hard. But once that assault happened, my binging like really took off. And, you know, I remember my athletic trainer being like, you know, like you've gained a lot of weight, that's why you have back problems, and, you know, being met with so much judgment and shame, like it was such a loss of identity. Unfortunately, it wasn't until I had kind of hit a really, you know, dark bottom basically of anorexia that I actually ended up getting help. But there were so many little red flags growing up, you know, binging, but at the time I didn't even know binging was a thing. You know, I thought I was just sitting in my bed watching Netflix surrounded by food, really happy. I'm like, people don't know, I don't know if people do this or not, but like, it's my little secret. I'm gonna go to Walmart at 2 a.m., get all my food, go back home, watch Friends on Netflix, and like just eat and just be totally numb to the world around me. And I didn't realize that was binge eating. I didn't realize that was an eating disorder.
Yeah, definitely. I can relate so much, you know, not realizing, like you said, that it was an actual eating disorder. I think part of me knew something was wrong, just because of how secretive I was about it. And the fact that, you know, I went to such lengths to hide everything and to lie to people. Like I knew that that wasn't good, but you know, I still kind of just always justified it to myself. And yeah, in hindsight, you know, sometimes I do realize there were so many red flags, and part of me, you know, always wished that someone would kind of question me more. And, you know, especially, you know, when I wouldn't eat dinner and, you know, my parents would ask why, and I would say, you know, I was already full or something. You know, I wish that they had really, you know, pushed me and questioned me. And that's not to like blame anyone else in any way, but I just, yeah, I was crying out for help, you know, silently, and just wishing more than anything that someone would notice that I wasn't okay. That was really tough.
I feel that. I felt like, I would be struggling so hard and not okay, yet I wouldn't ask for help and would like work so hard to cover it up, pretend everything was fine, but then still want someone to come and save me, even though I was putting on this facade that everything was perfect. So it was like this, I was preventing myself from getting the help, but also that was part of the reason why I needed help. So it was like this very like catch 22 kind of like thing I had going on there. So what did recovery look like for you? So you said you went to the doctor, you got referred to, I think you said a dietitianist, and then you started working with psychologists. And so what was that road like?
Yeah, it was a very long road. Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of different kind of professionals. Like I said, I saw a dietitian, and unfortunately, I don't think the dietitian that I saw was very specialized in eating disorders. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't find that overly helpful. And when I first saw my doctor at Student Health, they actually wouldn't refer me to the eating disorder specialist because, you know, the word they used was that my condition wasn't, quote, medically complicated. So basically, I guess they meant I wasn't, you know, at risk of like dying or anything. So it wasn't serious, is kind of how I took it. And so there were lots of times like that when I didn't feel like my situation was being taken very seriously, or I didn't feel like I was really getting the help that I needed. And part of that was kind of discouraging. But on the other hand, I was kind of happy because I was like, oh, okay, I'll just keep doing it then. You know, I was like, okay, I'll just keep binging, because I, you know, part of me wanted to stop so badly, but part of me loved it. It was like my worst enemy, but also my best friend. And so anytime I would get an option to kind of keep doing the behavior, I would always be really secretly happy about that.
So and with doctors,
sometimes,
like,
even when.
Yeah, like, it's, I know for myself, like, I was struggling so bad. And like you said, like, you want to, like, later on when it was for me binge purge, like, I remember seeing people, and because I was really athletic, and like, when I lost a bunch of weight really quickly, I was pretty more or less like shredded kind of underneath, and I fit into the still like low end of normal weight. They're like, oh yeah, like, it's fine, like, your BMI is okay. And I'm like, my hair is falling out, I've lost my period, like, I don't think this is okay. But you said that, like, my BMI is still, you know, in a considered a quote unquote healthy weight. So like, it's fine, even though, you know, I could see my rib cage, and like, it's so bizarre how your mind can kind of justify and take what people say and kind of twist it and make it fit into the disorder so that you can keep going, even though, you know, it's killing you. You know, at the same time, it's like that, it feels good. It's like that rush, you know, and it's, it becomes it's so hard to break.
Definitely. Yeah. I think one of the big things that helped me that was kind of a turning point was when I reached out to an organization here in Vancouver, and I don't know, you know, where else they operate, but I'm sure there are similar things in other cities. And in Vancouver, it's called the Looking Glass Foundation. And they pair you with someone who has recovered from an eating disorder, who is, you know, of a similar age and has had a similar experience to you. So it's kind of like a peer mentor. And I was kind of skeptical about it at first, but that was one of the best things I ever did, because I was matched with someone, and you know, I was able to talk to them, and I felt like they had actually been through what I was going through. They actually understood and could relate to me, whereas other people who I maybe opened up to or shared my story to just kind of looked at me with a bit of a blank face, and they felt bad, but they didn't like know how to help me or what to say, whereas this person I felt just instantly connected to, and I felt like I could really open up, and nothing was really off limits, you know, even things that I had never even had the courage to even say out loud before, I found myself telling them. And so that was really therapeutic for me, just to be able to talk about everything, and just take away some of like the shame and the embarrassment, and just, yeah, just start talking was huge for me.
Yeah, it's such a weight off the shoulders when you're able to finally break that silence. It's terrifying. Like, oh my God, it's so scary. Like, the fear around, like, what are they going to think? The judgment. But when you're able to talk with someone who's been there and had those behaviors, which is why I love coaching so much, and why, you know, I initially had started my program, even because I felt like there was so much, I felt like a lot of judgment, and a lot of, like, it was very cold when I was talking to like a psychologist, because they'd never been it and they've never been through it. And so, yeah, for you, like, pairing with someone who's been through it and like coaching, it's such a great option for people sometimes, or even a potentially like an add-on to what they're already doing. Because when you're able to have those open conversations, be like, look, like, I just did this and this and this, it's like, oh my God, I used to do it all the time. And, you know, here's what we can do, and blah, blah, blah. And like, just share and be so open about it. It's like, oh, okay. You know, it's just such a great relief to have.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I totally agree.
And so you were talking with kind of this peer, this person that you were matched with, and then what else kind of in recovery, what did that look like as well?
Yeah, so I was talking to them, and then kind of in combination with my doctor and my psychologist, you know, we were kind of able to come up with kind of a treatment plan. And I guess I can kind of go through with you some of the steps that I would encourage other people to take to stop binging, if that sounds good.
Yeah.
Awesome. So I think the first thing that was really important for me was kind of learning why it is that we binge, and kind of realizing that there could be two main reasons. You know, it could either be kind of a physiological response to hunger, or it could be kind of a way to regulate or control or numb, like we were saying, kind of your feelings. Or it could be as a result of shame or trauma that you've gone through or anxiety that you have. So kind of gaining some understanding was really important for me, because prior to that, I had no idea why I was engaging in these behaviors or what was causing it. And then the next kind of step that I took was just to become aware of what I was doing. And I did this by doing some self-monitoring. And I know this doesn't work for everyone, but for me, I found it really helpful to start kind of writing down what I was binging on, when I was doing it, where I was doing it, and kind of what I was feeling at that time. And kind of get to know like the triggers that I had personally. And so for so long, I had tried to stop the binge. I had kind of done everything in my power to avoid it. But this time I just kind of let it happen and leaned into it and just kind of got to know it. And I found that to be really helpful. And then the next thing that I kind of did was to try to stop dieting and restricting. The first kind of step that I took was to eat regularly. I think I kind of mentioned that, at least for myself, I was eating very irregularly, mainly surviving off what I had been binging on. So I implemented kind of mechanical eating and eating at least 3 solid meals a day. And then supplementing that with snacks as well at other times when I was hungry. And then also something I found really important was to kind of get rid of those kind of food rules that I had. So in my mind, I had kind of decided that certain foods were good and certain foods were bad, and that I had to avoid the bad foods at all costs. So kind of just making peace with food was really important to me, and breaking down some of those rules and assumptions and beliefs that I held. And then the last two things, one of them was getting to know my hunger and fullness cues. I guess because I had been engaging in disordered eating for so long, I had kind of buried a lot of those cues, and I had really lost touch with what it feels like to be hungry and what it feels like to be, you know, comfortably full. I really only knew what it felt like to be absolutely starving, and then to be full to the brim, to the point where I just felt like throwing up and I was so sick. And then the last thing that I found really helpful, and another step I would encourage others to take, is to engage in forms of self-care and really learn to take care of yourself with ways other than food. I mean, for me, food was my go-to for pretty much every emotion. You know, if I was sad or I was happy or I was stressed or I was bored, it didn't really matter. I always turned to food. So learning to get in touch with how I was feeling, label how I was feeling, and then finding a more appropriate way to meet my needs, that was also really important.
Hey, you guys, I wanted to quickly hop in here and give a quick shout out to one of the members in my Craving Food Freedom membership program. She wrote, "I just watched the training for this month, and oh my gosh, it is a game changer. I never realized there were so many different techniques I could use to stop emotional and stress eating. And then I watched the guest speaker training, and it was amazing. I'm totally going to implement these tips to reduce anxiety. It's the perfect topic to cover considering what's going on in the world right now. I find I get super anxious at night, so I find all these tools and connect techniques incredibly beneficial. Thank you so much, Victoria, for this amazing program." So thank you so much. And now back to the episode.
So many good tips. Yes. And I think it's really important to talk about the emotional side of things. I think sometimes people are just like, "Oh, well, I'm not restricting, so like, you know, why am I binging?" And it's so much deeper than that. You know, there's so many more reasons, and it can be more than one even at the same time. Like, you can be physically restricting, and then also you need a kind of a way to emotionally numb out. And it kind of works as both, and you've labeled things as good and bad. And so you never let yourself have certain foods, and then you end up binging on the foods that you considered bad and off limits. And you also hadn't eaten enough that day, and you also wanted to numb out. And so it can be so, you know, multi-layered. Yet I think oftentimes people kind of just assume it's the restriction piece. And I know the way I look at it like you have the physical restriction of food, but then also like the mental restriction of like good, bad, and the emotional restriction of not allowing yourself to process emotions, or like you said, even adding in other ways for self-care. And then I also talk about the way people kind of get, you know, really used to and habituated to that rush of feel good. So kind of related back to the emotional side of things, like when we eat like the high sugary, high calorie foods, they get like the serotonin, the dopamine, like all those feel good, basically hormones going through us. And if we're bored or sad, our brain goes, oh, let's do that thing that makes us feel really good. Like, you know, we were saying before about having the chocolate bars, you know, at school kind of thing. Your brain is like, oh, we're sad, we're bored right now. Let's go and do that habit where we feel really good all of a sudden. And so I think it's binging is so multi-layered. And it's important to look at that and discuss that as well. I love that you talked about self-care. Because I think especially a lot of women I talk with, there's a lot of pleasure deprivation going on in terms of like they never let themselves have fun. They're you know, usually very high achievers, perfectionists. That kind of really all or nothing mindset really relates to food and also really relates to binging. It has to either, you know, if I had one cookie over what I was allowed, or, you know, I wasn't exactly on my calories for the day, you know, fuck it, I might as well go all out kind of mentality. And so it's so rigid, it's so intense, and, you know, never letting themselves kind of slow down and have fun and take care of themselves, and then kind of using food as a way to outlet and release a lot of that. So what does self-care look like for you?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. Specifically because I think media portrays self-care in one particular way a lot of the time. And it can be like a really difficult concept to like grasp because it seems so vague and abstract. And so for me, it was just really finding things that I find really fill up my cup and really rejuvenate me. And that's going to look so different for different people. So for example, I'm kind of very introverted. So forms of self-care that I enjoy are very like much solo activities. Like I really like to go for a walk out in nature and listen to a podcast by myself. Whereas I know my sister, for example, she's super extroverted. And if she's ever feeling low energy or down or sad, she wants to go and surround herself with a bunch of people. So I think the first step is kind of just understanding yourself and what you enjoy is really important. And just not trying to copy what someone else is doing and expecting it to work for you. I mean, I see on social media, for example, a lot of people saying, okay, self-care Sunday, you know, I'm having a bubble bath with a glass of wine. And, you know, I know for myself, I don't enjoy taking baths and I don't drink alcohol. So I know that that wouldn't work for me, but, you know, it's easy to just kind of try to copy what someone else is doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, really defining what feels good for you. And I think as well, sometimes self-care is in a way, like not necessarily the things that feel good in that moment. Like I think there's a bit of a, like, it's yeah, like always the bubble baths and always the drinking the wine and getting the massage. But sometimes self-care is like even like setting boundaries and saying no to people. Mm-hmm. And you know, maybe it's getting off the couch and going for a walk on the days that you are feeling really depressed, but you know, like getting some sunshine, moving your body a little bit is going to really make you feel better. And so sometimes it's as well, like looking at self-care is this, not just, like I said, like the bubble bath, but kind of like what is actually best for your overall health, and not from a disordered place, but from like a loving, like what is actually, you know, what am I doing this for? What are the reasons behind it? And digging into the intentionality behind it, because I think even with things like self-care, you know, it's always important that we have like, why am I doing that when it comes to anything we're eating, any way we're moving our body, like what is the underlying reason? And I always ask them, like, is it coming from a place of love or a place of shame or a place of hate? And if it's coming from like a fear of weight gain or, you know, not liking yourself, like then take a second, reevaluate and see if you can kind of look at what the next right step is or what you need in that moment to kind of shift that into a place where it's more honoring you and your body.
Yeah, I think it's so important to be really intentional with things. And like you said, to be really honest with yourself, because you're the only one who knows why you're truly doing something. You know, nobody else knows, but being able to be really honest with yourself is so important. And yeah, like you said, kind of set yourself up for success in the future as well. So, you know, for example, maybe preparing some, you know, healthy meals for the week that you know you really enjoy, because you know you have a busy week coming up. And if you didn't have something prepared, you might be, you know, you might just go hungry, or you might eat something, you know, that you wish you hadn't, or, you know, who knows, just kind of, maybe if you can set yourself up for success in the future, that would be a really good use of your time in the present as well.
Yes, absolutely. And I see so many people, they get way too hungry. They're like, they don't have nothing in the house because I'm afraid of different foods. You know, I'm starving. And then they don't, you know, think to put food in the house, to plan a little bit in that sense. And then they binge and they order. Like what I used to do is I'd have nothing in the house because I'd be so afraid of food. And then I would order in like just a whack ton of Uber Eats and binge on all of it. Mm-hmm. Because I didn't have that kind of sense of, okay, like I need to have food in the house so that I don't get so hungry that I end up saying, fuck it, and ordering all the food. So yeah, like sometimes even doing some like gentle kind of prep, having some awareness and, like you said, intentionality behind what we're doing can really, really make a big difference as well.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And I know something that's come up a lot. I don't know if you follow like the Birds Papaya and like all those people, but thin privilege has been kind of a topic on social media right now. And I posted about it the other day, basically saying how I have thin privilege. You know, I get to go to the store and like buy clothes and they fit me, and I can go to the doctor and, you know, have them assess me for whatever the symptoms of, that I'm presenting, and not, you know, say something directly related to my weight, or, you know, people don't judge me a certain way simply because of, you know, being in a different size body, for example. And so I know I want to talk to you a little bit about kind of weight stigma, and, you know, what is your advice for other people who are maybe going through that?
Yeah, facing weight stigma is so challenging. You know, it's basically, you know, maybe for those who don't know what weight stigma is, it's kind of this social rejection or kind of devaluation that people experience when they don't really fit into that normal, that, you know, that societal normal for their body weight or shape. I hope I explained that in a way that makes sense.
So I
have faced that a lot. I think in a lot of ways I do think that I'm privileged. You know, I am privileged in so many ways, but I think that I have still faced weight stigma. And I think one of the biggest ways that I experienced that would be kind of in the field that I worked in. So I worked as a kinesiologist and a personal trainer, and I always felt like because I didn't fit into that specific mold of what a personal trainer would typically look like, I wasn't super shredded and super fit. I always felt like people just didn't value my opinion as much. You know, if someone wanted advice, they wouldn't take it from me because they didn't want to look like me. Like they kind of had this fear. I guess it kind of ties into like fat phobia as well. Mm-hmm. They kind of had this fear of gaining weight. And so if they kind of looked at me as someone in a larger body, they kind of feared that if they followed my advice or trained with me, they might end up that way. You know, and I had this a lot as well when I worked in the varsity gym at my university as a strength and conditioning coach. You know, I felt like, yeah, people just wouldn't really take advice from me as much as they would from someone who was like very thin and very fit. And so I always just felt like that was really challenging. But I kind of ended up flipping it around and kind of finding the niche that I fit really well with working with. And it kind of happened when I was working as a personal trainer, and I had this girl come into the gym and she requested to train with me specifically. And I was super excited. You know, I was pretty new to the job and I thought, that's amazing, someone's requested me. And I kind of asked her, I said, like, why did you request to train with me particularly? And she said, because you're actually relatable. Like, I can actually see myself in you. Like, you're not this like perfect fitness model, and that's actually normal. You know, I feel comfortable talking to you because yeah, it just seems like you, you know, have maybe gone through something like what I'm going through versus the other girls, you know, they just seem so unrelatable because they seem so perfect. And I thought, wow, you know, that's so amazing that she felt comfortable talking to me. And that I could help her to feel, yeah, to feel comfortable in the gym. So I just realized, I was like, you know what? Yeah, like it is hard to be in a larger body and to be kind of, yeah, but then there's so many benefits as well because I'm able to help other people. So in a way, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. And it's funny because I know for myself, like I was a personal trainer. And I was like on the side of when I was working corporate, and I was the unhealthiest person you've ever met in your life. And I didn't even really know what I was doing that well, but my body looked like I knew what I was talking about because I wasn't like, I looked very fit, but like I wasn't eating. I was purging every night. I was working out like 5 hours a day, going on like 30 kilometer runs and like training all the time. Like I was the epitome of sickness. And yet people were like, oh my God, can you help me? Can you train me? And I'm like, yeah, like it would fueled like the disorder. And like, it's so even people who go to the gym, and I'm not saying this is for everyone, but you never know what's going on behind the scenes of people. Like you never know what someone, you look at their body and you think, oh my God, they're so fit. They're in such good shape. And you look at them and you're like, yeah, I want to be like you. It's like, you want to feel good in your body. You want to feel strong. You want to feel even like comfortable with the trainer you're working with. Mm-hmm. So don't always take things at face value, what people look like, and know like it's about the connection you have with them. And again, I'm not saying one better than the other in terms of not saying certain body is better, but you know, sometimes mm-hmm. the way people get to that body or maintain that body isn't necessarily health. And so we shouldn't look at some people and assume that, you know, we want to be exactly like them and maybe even follow exactly what they're telling us. Cause that's kind of how I fell down a big rabbit hole by following an Instagram influencer and starting her 12-week weight loss guaranteed program. Cause she had like the best abs and she was just spoon feeding me all this totally disordered stuff, not eating enough, working out crazy hours. And I just believed her because of her body. And so, you know, just, you know, having a little, like take a pause and think before you go off on like a personal trainer or, you know, start working with someone or a dietitian or whatever. And like, you know, look at the underlying values, look at what's going on, understand what they're doing and don't just blindly follow.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I love so much about the work that you actually do is how you really emphasize like the evidence-based approaches and everything you kind of talk about is based on science. And that's one of the things that really attracted me to your Instagram page specifically, because I thought, okay, this girl actually knows what she's talking about. You know, she's actually done the research and she can actually help people. You know, it's again, there's nothing wrong with like just sharing your own personal experience, like mm-hmm. a lot of people do. But I do think that there are so many people out there on social media who don't have very much education in the area or haven't done their own research. And they're just kind of, you know, feeding out information to people that isn't real or true, and people are just kind of following that information because they maybe have a big following or they have an attractive, you know, a body like you said, or for whatever reason. So mm-hmm. yeah, it's definitely important to be like informed before you share information to others.
So important. And that's the dangers of social media, is like the lack of regulation around what people are sharing. And even like, I don't know if you're on TikTok, but like I see like so many things come up my feed where it's like, what I eat in a day. And it's this girl who's like very thin. It's like one smoothie and an apple. And it's like, and then she like smiles and it's like the 500 calorie diet. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, like so many mm-hmm. young people are consuming this, you know, and thinking this is what I need to be doing. And it's like, just, it's so scary. So like, yeah, again, like having these conversations and being like, you know, it's not normal to eat under 1,000 calories or under like 1,200 calories a day. Like that's like what a toddler needs. And looking at the education, does this make sense? If I'm starving all the time, that doesn't make sense. Like eating like one meal every 7, 8, 9 hours. Like that's, you know, dig into that a little bit more, question that a little bit more. Don't just, you know, assume because people maybe have their own experience with it, even if it's the truth. Or if there's, you know, anything to actually back it up, and maybe even challenging them on it, being like, hey, I saw you share this, kind of, could you explain a little bit more where you came up with that? Or like, what the reasoning is behind that, or the article, or, you know, a journal, like a scholarly journal to explain that more. Because I feel like a lot of people never get challenged on it, and then they just get away with sharing crazy things.
Yeah. Yeah. And that can be, you know, I do think it's so important to challenge people, but it can be like a really hard road to take.
Oh, for sure.
You know, like I find myself trying to share kind of more evidence-based scientific side, similar to you. And I just feel like we are definitely the minority on social media. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely like the less kind of sexy truth, I find. Yeah. People want to believe that there's like a simple fix, or like an overnight fix, you know, or there's like some secret to how they can live like a super happy, healthy life. But like, there isn't really a secret. There's no, it doesn't happen like overnight. It requires a lot of work and et cetera. And people just don't really want to hear that, I find, in a way. Yeah. So I think it's like hard to share what we're sharing. But I know it's really important, and that's what motivates me to kind of keep going, but it can be tough for sure.
Yeah, no, it's super tough because people want the sexy, like, you know, lose 100 pounds in 5 days. Like, that's what they want, because it's so surface level. It's so like, you know, it's like, you know, the band-aid over the bullet wound. It's like, okay, well, like, why do you want to lose weight? Like, what is going on there? What's mm-hmm. deeper? And even though I know for you, you really talk about the Hayes approach, so the health at every size. And could you kind of explain what that is and what it means for you and your clients?
Yeah, definitely. So the Hayes stands for health at every size. And it's basically the idea that you're kind of trying to promote size acceptance and trying to kind of end weight discrimination and lessen kind of society's overall obsession with weight loss and with thinness. And so how it kind of looks when I work with people specifically one-on-one is we really just focus on trying to, you know, eat in a balanced way, move in ways that people enjoy, and really helping people to accept their body as it is, and find respect for their body and for other bodies that are at, you know, that are have diverse shapes and sizes. I think especially when I also worked as a kinesiologist in kind of like a clinical setting, it was really important for me because, you know, I've kind of seen some of the statistics of how many women don't seek healthcare because they fear weight discrimination. And so I always kind of wanted people to know that it didn't matter what size or shape they were going to receive the same quality of care from me. And I wasn't going to judge them for that. I wasn't going to assume that their size had anything to do with their health status. And really just focus not on people's weight and not on trying to change that, but just focusing on their health and focusing on healthy behaviors as the main thing.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Cause yeah, we're so much more than our bodies, and yet in our society, unfortunately, that's what we're often perceived as. So challenging that and having accounts like you and me, we're like, we're so much more than a body. Like, it's the least interesting thing about you. And like, let's get you feeling good and feeling amazing. It's a total kind of a radical approach, but thankfully one that is gaining a bit more momentum. And you hear the words like Hayes and like fat phobia and thin privilege and intuitive eating and all these things are coming up more and more. So it's exciting. I feel like we're kind of on the edge of that and really challenging diet culture. And so really glad that we were able to have this conversation and help bring it a bit more to the forefront so that other people can learn more about it.
Yeah, definitely.
And so the question I ask everyone on the podcast, because the name of the podcast is called Weighing In on Happy. So what is one thing that makes you happy?
That's a really good question. I feel like there are so many things that I like don't want to choose one because it like stresses me out to choose one and then forget about the other one. part of me just wants to say something kind of cliche, like my family. And like, as much as that's cliche, it's so true. Like, my family does make me really happy, but that's not going to be my answer.
Okay. It could be whatever you want. It's a subjective question, so there's no wrong answer.
I think the thing that makes me the happiest is like a Sunday morning. When I wake up and I have like another day of the weekend left, but I have the whole week to look forward to. And then I start just like preparing for the week ahead because I really love to plan. And I kind of just do things around my house. Like I do laundry and just like organize my life and feel really peaceful. Yeah, it's like a good Sunday morning. That's something that makes me really happy.
I love that. I totally relate to that. Like Sunday, I took off social media. I usually sleep in. I have my coffee. I like get my whiteboard out and I like plan my week. And it's just very like chill and zen. And like, yeah, that was a great answer. I mean, I liked your family answer too, but they're both good answers.
Yeah, something about just like a Sunday. It's just, it's such a vibe. It's just, I don't know. It's just like the start to a great week. And I don't know. I always just have so much, like I said, so much to look forward to. And yeah,
I love it. And so where can people find you if they want to learn more about you?
Yeah, they can check out my Instagram. It's emma.respectyourbody. And then from there, there are kind of links to my website and to my YouTube channel and other things if they wanted to check that out as well.
Amazing. And I will link that below in the show notes for everyone. I just want to say thank you so much for coming on today. So cool to have this kind of an open conversation about binging and weight stigma and all these things that, you know, a lot of people don't necessarily understand, and happy to start, you know, have that conversation.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. And to anyone listening, you know, if you do struggle with any of the things that we talked about or you want to learn more, feel free to reach out to myself or Victoria, like via DM or, you know, however you want, because we're, I can confidently say this, that we're like both very willing to help. And, yeah, the hardest part is just kind of reaching out to someone. So yeah, we're both here and we're here for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you so much again, and we'll talk soon. Okay.
Okay. Bye.
Hey, you guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode with Emma. If you enjoyed it as much as I did, then please rate and review. Additionally, if you want a screenshot and tag me on Instagram to let you know that you listened, I would absolutely love that. Now, for more information on me, my programs, the Craving Food Freedom membership program, you can stop food fear and guilt so you can eat effortlessly and intuitively, then check out my website, www.victoriaevansofficial.com. You can also find me on Instagram, that is at Victoria Evans Official, and I've also dropped a little freebie there below for you in the show notes. So thank you so much for listening. Check out the show notes for all the different resources available to you. And until next week, I hope you have a fabulous day. Bye-bye.